Welcome to Grad Chat by PhD Balance, where we talk about topics of grad school beyond academic research that may be more difficult to talk about in our day-to-day. I'm your host, Liesl Krauss. If you like what you see here, check out PhD Balance YouTube channel and anchor.fm for more grad chats, and don't forget to subscribe for notifications about when we go live. This is going to be our last episode of the year. Our topic today is transitioning to a postdoc, and I'd like to welcome our guests, Dr. Ubada Sagba, he, him, and Dr. Kayla Singleton, she, her. Dr. Kayla is a Black Samoan queer developmental neuroscientist and postdoc in Dr. Victor Fondez's lab at Emory University. Her research focuses on the cellular and molecular signals that control neuron development in normal and disease states. She is also an adjunct faculty member in the biology department at Agnes Scott College and president-elect and co-founder of Black and Neuro. In her short time as postdoc, Dr. Singleton has earned 4 years of research funding from NIH, the prestigious Bureau's Welcome Fund Postdoctoral Enrichment Fellowship, published 4 manuscripts, given 15 invited seminars, and spoken on 21-plus panels on membership and DEI initiatives. Dr. Ubada Sagba is a neuroscientist at the McGovern Institute at MIT, where he is a postdoctoral associate in Dr. Guopin Feng's laboratory. Dr. Sagba attended community college for 3 years before transferring to the University of Missouri, Kansas City, where he earned his bachelor's degree in biology. He later earned his PhD in translational biology, medicine, and health at Virginia Tech, where he studied connections between the eyes and the brain. Outside of the lab, Dr. Sagba is heavily involved in science outreach, advocacy, and policy. He co-founded and serves on the board of Black and Neuro and has written extensively on topics at the intersection of science and policy. So thank you guys again so much for joining me here today. I'm super excited to talk to both of you about, you know, your experiences and, you know, being postdocs.
Yeah, thanks for the invitation.
Yeah, thanks for having us and letting us combine our sessions together.
Yes.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I'm super excited to have kind of two experiences here that we can talk about. So the first question that I have on the docket for you guys is, I know we're here to talk about postdocs, but first let's talk a little bit about grad school. Do you each want to tell us briefly about your experiences in grad school?
Yeah, sure. I can go first. So I attended grad school at Georgetown University in the interdisciplinary program in neuroscience, and I was there for 6 years, and it was, I think, like, looking back in hindsight, it was a really great experience. Like, I grew a lot as a person, as a scientist, definitely a lot as a person, and I had to learn a lot about myself, I think, in order to, like, really finish my PhD strong. My research focused on neural development in, like, a really basic and foundational way. But I had a lot of ups and downs with, like, mentorship relationships and sort of advocating for myself and learning how to do that. And I think I attribute a lot of my grad school success to, like, my friends, other people in my lab, or just in my program and in DC in general that were really helpful. And it was a great time. By the end of it, I earned the F99K00 fellowship, which is what I have now. So it funded the last 2 years of my postdoc or of my grad work, and now funds 4 years of my postdoctoral work. And so I think by the end of grad school, though, I hated it so much. I was so jaded. I hated it so much. I couldn't imagine staying for, like, another day. But I'm really happy in my postdoc now. So it, like, gets better. Like, cute phrase.
Yeah, that's awesome to hear. I think a lot of people can relate to, having the wherewithal to look back on, like, the experience and seeing what positives we can get from it, but also not feeling those positives in the moment.
Yeah. So my graduate school experience was also very kind of formative for things that are not science related for me as well. Much like Kayla, I also had multiple different kind of experiences that helped me shape my both personal and professional identities. But yeah, I mean, I never, like, set out on the path of science or academia, really. I didn't know what I was going to do when I came to America. So a lot of it was winging it in the beginning, and then, got into a graduate program at Virginia Tech, luckily it was a fantastic program that had supportive staff and a good environment, had rotations. So I took advantage of the rotations and tried to be thoughtful about who I choose to work with and spend time with for the next few years. And I chose a great lab, a great mentor. So I actually had pretty good experiences within the lab. I had the regular challenges that come with science. But, you know, outside my institution, outside the lab, just in the greater context of academia and academic science, you know, as soon as I started to see the faults and the problems that we have in our various institutions, you know, I had also like very disheartening kind of outlook on, you know, is this what I want to be doing? And so, but I think the story has just been like, you know, there's days, weeks, months where you're happy and this is what you want to be doing. And then there's days, weeks, months where it's not. And you just have to keep self-reflecting. And that's what I did. And I talked to close friends, colleagues, peers, they helped me through that kind of reflection. But yeah, anyway, ended up getting my PhD and now I'm here. I don't know how to summarize grad school. Like, you know, I did work and published it and then here I am.
And then I got my PhD.
Yeah. I was traumatized and now people call me doctor. It's great.
Yeah, for some reason, yeah.
Can I get that on a t-shirt when I graduate? Yeah. That's so accurate.
For real, that should be on a t-shirt, Kayla.
Well, you know, both of you expressed, you know, this, at the end of it, you kind of were the system, you know, the whole traumatized and now people call me doctor thing. So how, did you both know that you wanted to stay in academia kind of despite or in spite of those feelings and do a postdoc?
So I definitely didn't. By the time I was like trying to figure out what was going to happen next for me, I just like, I knew I needed a job. And because I had postdoctoral funding, that was like the easiest job for me to get. I was like, well, I can definitely get a postdoc. And I felt like I didn't have a lot of time to figure out how to get like a real person job. But with that information, when I was meeting with like potential postdoc mentors, I told all of them that like I really wasn't sure if I wanted to stay in academia or if I liked it anymore. And so I wanted to set that expectation initially that like this is a trial period for me. And so I was really intentional about like the mentor, like choosing my mentor, not necessarily the science, because I as a person, I love the physical act of doing science. Like I could pipette clear liquids and slightly colored liquids every day for the rest of my life and be like really fulfilled. And so for me, it was about like the mentor and not necessarily the project and making sure that I could like be in a setting where if I decided I wanted to leave academia for something else, my mentor would be able to help me do that and they would be supportive of me in doing that. So it definitely wasn't for me. I just did it because it was easy.
I forgot the question.
Yeah, sure. So the question is, did you know that you wanted to stay in academia and do a postdoc, you know, even despite or in spite of these feelings of jadedness towards academia?
When I started, like when I applied to PhD programs, because I'd never known what that was. So my first understanding of it was from my undergrad PI. And he said, and my understanding was that academia, like that's what people go to grad school for, right? Which is what, you know, the default usually in people's minds is. But then, you know, in my first, starting with my first year, I started, you know, realizing that there's other opportunities and skill sets to explore. So I, in grad school, really spent a lot of time in communication or policy or advocacy, really got into that work. So I saw myself like going into science journalism seriously at some point, or going into policy and the nonprofit world. But also during the whole time, I really liked things that are core to academic research, which is of course the science, but you can do science in many places. But two other things that I really enjoyed was teaching. which is hard to do in a non-academic setting. And then the other thing was mentorship. And mentorship exists in non-academic settings, of course, but I felt like, and I still feel like, the kind of involvement you can have in a person's life and the kind of investment you can make in a person, and then you watch them grow and become the version of themselves that they want to be, and you can be part of that growth. That kind of thing is hard to, it's just different when it's an academic setting and you're like, you have an undergrad or a graduate student and you're helping them, you know. And I really, that's a very like compelling thing for me in this gig. So, you know, I was flirting with leaving, and then I wrote a grant, much like Kayla. and then, you know, I was like, to myself, I was like, oh, you know, if I get this, then I'll pretend it's the universe saying stick around, at least until the grant's over. And then I got it. And so I stuck around, and I'm really enjoying it. It is a very different vibe as a postdoc. It's very, like the pressures and the deadlines and things are just different. And I'm still exploring that now, the feeling. I'm enjoying it, actually. And a lot of it has to do with how you choose, and we'll get into that later, how you choose where to go and what things you place high value on when you make your decisions. But yeah, so I didn't always want to be in academia. I still have days now where, you know, I don't want to. And that's when I'd like, you know, Kayla and I start chatting and you know, walk ourselves through it. But yeah, I mean, in the large scheme, I'm still down for this gig as long as it's fun. If I'm not having fun, I'm getting miserable. And, you know, this is not like the purpose of my life or something. You know what I mean? And there's other places where I can do fulfilling work and probably get paid more. So I'm in it. I'm in it as long as it's fun.
That's awesome. I like that, you know, both of you are kind of intentional about this being like a trial period, as Kayla said, in terms of, you know, doing this until, you know, it's not what is good for you anymore, and really being kind of intentional and open with that. That's awesome. So next question is, how did both of you go about getting a postdoc? It sounds like both of you kind of had the experience of writing a grant and having funding to go do this. But is that, you know, what you do is you just write a grant, or what's that process look like?
I think Sarbada has a like a really good guide on his website. But so like we have the same fellowship. And so you apply for that fellowship like towards the end of your grad experience. And you essentially can take that, the like postdoctoral paid part of it, to whatever it's like US based institution. There are like rules where you can take it. And so I really started looking for postdocs by making a list of papers that I liked. Like I tried really hard to go the like science approach route of like falling in love with like another facet of neurodevelopment, or thinking about like what I would want to study in the most ideal environment for myself. And that really didn't work for me because I was having such a hard time getting my own science to work that I was like, I cannot fathom getting this other kind of science to work unless I'm studying like actin, maybe. So I started, once that didn't work, I started by making a list of like my own strengths and weaknesses and trying to figure out what I wanted to work on. So I had like things that I was good at, things that I was bad at that I would like want to fix, and then things that I was bad at that I never wanted to do again, like whether that was like specific experiments or specific facets of my personality that I was like, this is just who I am. I do not want to be trained to improve this. And I went around like on the internet and looked at like lab websites and talked to like some friends and my PIs about different labs that I could interview with or like labs that they thought would fit that. And I just sort of made these like broad career goals where it's like, I want my postdoc to be like, I want to have a lot of autonomy. I want to be able to like mentor students in this way. I want to do this like vague kind of like biochemical research because that's what I'm good at. And specifically, I never want to have to do like animal behavior ever again. Like these are the kinds of, like, I really tried to set it up as like my most ideal situation. And then once I had that list of people, I like interviewed and I thought more about like them and their style. And I'm sure there's like a follow-up question where we can go into detail about that. But a lot of it really was, for me, the key was like sitting down with myself and trying to figure out like, what had I learned in graduate school? What did I like and what did I not like? Because I didn't want to spend the next 4 to 5 years, however long these postdocs last, miserable again. I was like, I can't do that again. That was bad.
Much like how, you know, Kayla said that she went through papers, you know, that she liked, I actually like started off by going, I have like in my inbox, like whenever I see a paper I really want to read or something, you know how like we all pile up papers that we never read. And so like what I did was I usually email them to myself or something like that. And so I have a folder called need to read. And it's full of like unreads. And so I went in there and I was just like, I must have been interested in these at some point. Let me like skim through them and see what's up. Because something drew me to this work, right? Because they're not all in my field. And so I started reading them. And then I would also like, anytime I attend a seminar in a field that's not mine and, think like, oh, that's really some cool, you know, like I could see myself doing this. I wish I did this work. You know, when somebody tells a story and you're like, oh, I wish I did this, like that's to me a good sign. So all of these things, that's how I started off because I wasn't committed to a field necessarily. I'm interested in all kinds of neuroscience work, and so I started off that way by kind of getting a sense of the fields that are compelling to me, and then I built a list of PIs labs that are, you know, behind these papers. And I literally have an Excel sheet that I just like list them all. What cities are they in? What institutions are they from? Is there anything I can glean from the internet about their record of training? You know, have they had super long postdocs work in their lab, or have they had like regular, you know, time? How do they publish? Do they only publish in big papers, or do they publish a variety of journals and things like that, you know, whatever I can glean from the internet, I would put notes in the Excel sheet and this process. And then I would also ask people around me, you know, do you know this PI? Do you know that PI? And do you know anybody in this lab? Are they happy? And then when it came down, and so the list started off at like 36 people, I think, which is a lot. That's because I wasn't committed to a field. But then when it came down to trimming the list and the kind of coming up with my top hits, I had to decide how I want to weight the different factors in the decision making process. And so at the very top of that was culture, mentoring, philosophy, things like that. I can get excited about a lot of science, but if I'm in an environment where I'm not happy, or I'm being kind of abused labor wise or otherwise, why subject myself to that? And none of this process, by the way, has anything to do with do you have funding or not. It's just like, you know your self-worth. Try not to put yourself in an environment where the people around you don't recognize your worth, right? And then take advantage of you or whatever. So we'll probably dig into it more later. But essentially, I trimmed it down from 36 to 5, and that's the list that I moved forward with.
Oh, yeah, I like that. Both of you kind of talked about making sure that you know your self-worth. I just said Ubata, and I also like that you talked about trying to find like a place where you felt like it was a good fit for you. You know, Kayla, as you said, making sure that if there was something that you just didn't want to do ever again, you weren't going to be put in a position where that was a mandatory thing that you had to do on a daily basis. I think that that's something that, you know, sometimes as grad students, we tell other grad students, oh, yeah, like that's what you want to do. But maybe at the grad school level, you don't always have the opportunity to make those decisions. So being able to make those decisions as a postdoc, you know, just being more confident about making those decisions is really important. So how did you guys approach the PIs that you were interested in working with? You said that you, you know, looked at papers and looked at the kind of cultures and stuff first to figure out what PIs you were interested in. But then what's the next step for us?
So I sent a couple of, I guess they were like semi-cold emails. I think all of the PIs, I interviewed with like 3 PIs and I knew their work and they knew like either my PI, my current PIs like in graduate school or my previous PIs from undergrad. So I sent them just like an email that was like, hey, I would like a postdoc. It was more detailed than that. But I sent them an email and talked to them a little bit about like the funding that I had. And from there, this was also like pre-pandemic. So from there, they like invited me to give talks and like meet their lab and like ask a bunch of questions and have a lot of discussions. So I like gave my talk and then I met everybody in all of the labs and then we had like another round of talks, like phone calls, which I really hated as a person. From there, it was really up to me to like make the decision. But I think honestly, one of the best things that I did was when I met people, I was like really adamant that I wanted to meet people, not just in the lab, but like in the department or in the like institution as a whole. Because one of the things that I think is hard about a postdoc is like when you join graduate school, you join a cohort of people, like you have friends that you're going to hang out with because you take classes together and like do rotations and things like that. But when you're a postdoc, you're just like showing up for a job. So it really is just you. So I was really interested in like the postdoc, like if they had like a postdoctoral office or association that could give you like extra training, if people like had friends was really a big thing for me. Because I couldn't imagine like making friends as an adult is already so hard. And I couldn't imagine moving to a brand new city and having to do that again. Which is one of the reasons why I think I ended up at Emory in Atlanta because my family is here. But a lot of it was like, for like lack of a better word, me just like trying to figure out the vibe of the like lab and the PI and the institution as a whole to see if I could like envision myself like thriving there. And that was kind of it was hard because you have to like kind of trust your instincts and your own like gut feelings. But I was really in a place where I think like I've probably said for like every answer where I was like, I cannot be unhappy again. So I really am going to like try and listen to my intuition in this. And that worked out. Like I'm an incredibly happy postdoc. I love my job. I love what I do. I love the lab that I work in. And I'm having a lot of fun.
That's awesome.
The postdocs I emailed, the question was, how did you reach out? Yeah.
Yeah. Reach out to your PIs, to potential PIs.
So the PIs I emailed, none of them I have met in person or I've never interacted with them. I think one of them I attended a talk he gave one time, but never interacted with him. I didn't talk to him after or anything. But I emailed 5, so they were all cold emails. But before I emailed any of them, I had gotten some kind of like if it came to the point that I'm contacting you, then I've already done some diligence and talked to either people in your lab or alumni from your lab or something, or talk to people I know in my network who have heard of you or know about your lab culture. Because I didn't want to waste time cold interviewing without having done some diligence beforehand. And in my case, it was all virtual because this was like, I don't know, November, December last year, 2020, the pre-vaccines coming out and the holiday surge and all this stuff. So anyway, yeah, I emailed 5, the reaching out was essentially, so Kayla mentioned something on my website. So I actually put the literal email on my website so people can see exactly how I framed it. But you know, it's just like, you know, my name is Iwata. I did this kind of shit in my PhD. Sorry, I did this kind of stuff in my PhD. And here's what I'm interested in now. I like you because you guys do this other cool stuff. And I think I could get into this. And here's what I offer you. And here's what I think I can get from you. So let me know if you want to chat. That's it. Nothing committal or anything like that. And I think it's really helpful to think of it as like the posture you're approaching these people from is like, I'm an expert now and I have like these skills that you're not like a complete newbie or something, and you have a lot of leverage. And so when you talk to them, or even if it's cold emailing, I think it's good to think of yourself as like proposing to work with someone, not under their tutelage or something like that. I hate these kinds of terms, but like, so anyway, so just that cold email, that I attach my CV and that's it. I send follow-ups to people who didn't respond after a certain amount of time. And then I got responses from everybody, all five, but two of them just said, we overhired or we don't have capacity to take more new people this year. So I was like, bet, I'll move on to the next three. And then, did virtual screening interviews, usually is how it goes. Not phone call, I did Zoom, but this was like everybody was used to Zoom by then. Imagine like voice notes, like you and a PI sending voice notes on WhatsApp instead of like a phone call. I wouldn't mind that. But yeah, I did like a little half hour or 1 hour screen, and then the PIs, just to see if it's a good fit, vibes are, you know, kind of okay. And then once you do that, then they're like, okay, let's schedule a seminar. And you can meet the lab and then, you know, do a virtual visit. I also asked to, but I didn't do this for every lab that I interviewed with, but I asked in some cases to meet, like, because they arrange kind of an itinerary for you when you do a virtual visit or an in-person visit. And so I asked, like, is it possible to arrange meetings with faculty in the department that you guys collaborate with or talk to in journal clubs, or like, just so I get a sense of the intellectual environment there, like, who am I going to be interacting with? And then the other thing was, can I meet with postdocs in the departments that are not in the lab? And so, like, one of the PIs went above and beyond. He, like, organized a meeting with four postdocs from four different labs, including the head of the postdoc association. And it was very, like, insightful for me. Like, it was very useful for me to talk to them to get a sense of life over there. So, yeah. And then, so after the cold email, usually ball gets rolling with, like, a casual interview and then a virtual visit or an in-person visit, which ends with another interview kind of usually between you and the PI at the end of your visit.
Wow. Yeah, that's a really thorough explanation. Thank both of you for, what that looks like and what that process looks like. I think it kind of can be a mystery to some of us who haven't gone through it yet. So kind of moving on to being in the postdoc position, what does your day-to-day look like? You can kind of briefly explain kind of like what a day in the life is like, or kind of what some of the tasks or responsibilities that either of you might have in your labs as postdocs, and maybe how those are different from being a grad student.
Yeah, this is something I always try to emphasize to like grad students who are looking for postdocs, because I remember people telling me this. They were like, your postdoc is like way different from graduate school. And it's true. And I don't actually know why it is, but like, and it could just be that all of my time is my own and I only am doing the projects or working with people that like I want to work with. I don't have like external commitments associated with like my degree. I don't know. I think it's also on some level, like the competence that you gain as a postdoc. Like I remember the first time a grad student came to me in our lab to ask me a question as if I was like an authority figure that like knew the answer. I was like, what are you, what is this? This is very awkward. But my day to day is really like, I think a lot of this also depends on like the lab that you choose. And I was really intentional in picking Victor's lab because he's really lax, go with the flow kind of gentleman. So he doesn't like care when we're in lab. But my day-to-day now really looks like me going into lab in the mornings. I'll do my experiments. I'll check my cells. I'll check my flies. I'll map out experiments, chat with Victor, chat with people in the lab. I teach at Agnes Scott College. So in the afternoons, I'll generally go teach and then I go home. I'll sprinkle in like random meetings and things like that. But for me, a big part of my lab schedule is that I'm only in lab when I absolutely have to be in lab now. Like if I have to be there to like do the experiment, then I'm there. But if I'm going to like read papers or analyze data or something like that, I'll do that at home because I know that it's more comfortable for me. And no one in my lab really cares. And so now because of like the pandemic and I guess the like blessing of Zoom on some level, I can just like leave lab by 2, go work on some data, and then like Zoom with someone from my lab if I need to ask them a question or talk to them or something like that. But so for me, it looks like a lot more freedom and a lot more autonomy and like ownership of my work where I don't feel like I've done something wrong, so I need someone to check it, or I don't feel like I have to be in lab all of the time in order to feel productive. So yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. So the freedom aspect of Kayla's answer, I have the same experience. I share that too. But I think we should be clear that this is not a default thing with postdoc experiences. This is part of the diligence you need to do when you're choosing, I think. So I directly asked people, like I asked the PIs who I interviewed with, and as well as the postdocs or other lab members that I talked to, like, what are the expectations of the PI for your, you know, do they care that you're physically there at specific hours, things like that, you know? And then I asked the PI, you know, what are your expectations for coming into lab or not? And productivity wise, how often do you demand data? Like, I'm driven enough, like I'm okay, but like, are you going to be pressuring me for like some new data every week or something, you know, because this happens. So you can get as much clarity as you need before you jump into and make a commitment into a lab about this, so that it fits your style of how you do science and how you want to just live your life as an adult, you know, like by the time you're starting a postdoc, like it feels nuts, but yeah, you're a proper adult and you have maybe family and stuff. And I don't know, but, anyway, so my regular day is, go into lab whenever I want. If it's like raining and I don't want to go out, I'll wait till it stops raining. If I have no like time sensitive experiment or something, I'll go in. You know, people don't care when I'm in or when I'm not. If somebody needs help, yeah, like it can be virtual, but really I'm not getting asked for help that much these days because I'm still relatively new. This is the thing. So when you start a postdoc, it's very strange because like by the time you're done in your PhD lab, you're super like you're probably the most like knowledgeable in terms of like the lab structure and how things go, person in the lab, because you're like super senior and people come to you and you're training the new people coming in, the rotation students or undergrads or whatever it is. And like, yeah, like you know your stuff. And then you go join a postdoc lab and like, there was a day I just wanted to make like PFA, like formaldehyde, and it took me like 35 minutes to find where's the PFA, you know, like, and it's not even just finding stuff, like knowing who to talk to about things and knowing how things work, and people have different machines, instruments and things like that. And, you know, you feel like somehow like at the same time, a first year grad student, but also like, you know, more, and can do more. And it's fine because both can be true. And it just takes some time to like get, you know, the pace of everybody else. So anyway, I show up to lab, do whatever I gotta do, leave when I gotta leave or wanna leave. I mean, I don't know, my regular, that's the thing, like what Kayla said, like you do, your time is yours. Another thing that you should suss out during the interviews, because like it can be made to be this kind of experience, but you just have to do your diligence. You have to choose well. Your time is yours. And I feel like, I can work at the pace that I want to work. And that's because I chose an environment where that's, compatible, you know?
Yeah, that's awesome. And that definitely gives some perspective about like how being a postdoc is different than being a grad student, which I think is something that, a lot of people could wonder about, you know, especially again, not having experienced it yet. It can sometimes feel from the outside that it would be more of the same, but knowing that you can actually kind of take a little bit more control over how you're working and what you're doing is really good to know. We have, you know, a couple of minutes left to chat here. So I want to know, what is one piece of advice that people should take away from this episode?
I think for me, I feel like we've hinted at this, like, when we've been talking, but for me, it's really to, like, do your due diligence in those interviews. I feel like I talk to a lot of grad students, and they feel like they're not, like, competent or ready for a postdoc, that they don't have, like, the ability to do one. And if graduate school trains you for anything, it's to do a postdoc. It's, like, the next logical step. And so for me, the biggest advice that I give people is to really think about, like, your career goals and what you want. And when you're, like, talking to, like, potential labs or thinking about interviews and things like that, like, be yourself and really advocate for yourself and the things that you want. Like, the level of, like, freedom and autonomy that Bada and I have in our postdocs is because we kind of, it was, like, mandatory for us. In order to succeed, in order to go to the next step. And so for me, a lot of the times it's about, like, empowering students so that they feel like they're ready to do a postdoc, but also, like, emboldening them to ask for the things that they want, like, to actually have those conversations. And they're awkward and they can be really difficult, but if you don't ask for them, you won't get that kind of freedom. You won't get the things that you need. And I think communication is really important in a mentor relationship, especially during your postdoc. And so I think really, like, emphasizing that, like, you want to be able to talk to your postdoc mentor about your needs, your wants, like, what you like and don't like. So I feel like that, like, that's the thing that I would take away from it.
Yeah. I don't have, like, an additional piece of, like, that's a very good, I'd like to just emphasize it instead of giving a different piece of advice, but, but yeah, I mean, I think this is a very good point. And I think this is a crucial thing that if a senior or grad student isn't attentive to, can cause them, like, lots of heartache and trouble later. So communication, transparent communication, you are most likely undervaluing yourself already. So, you know, and, like, I talk this way and I also undervalue myself, and then Kayla checks me on it, you know, like, but, so yeah, so you're already probably undervaluing yourself. The industry, our industry, academia, undervalues you, underpays you. So why, you know, be an accomplice to that too, to yourself, right? So, like, take time, reflect on what's important to you, what's important to you professionally and personally. And prioritize bringing those up in your interviews. And if you worry that you offend or you something like that, like, is it appropriate to ask this question or that question? All of them are appropriate. It's completely fine. And if you do offend the PI, which might happen because some PIs are sensitive and academia is full of this. If you do offend them, then so what? Like, just go somewhere else. Like, you don't need them. And, you know, they're lost, right? Like, you need to, like, look out for yourself, advocate for yourself. Some, you know, practical things, I think, try to plan ahead if you can. You will feel overwhelmed. It's completely fine. I don't think you're going to avoid the feeling of being overwhelmed. The last stretch of grad school is just chaotic. You're wrapping up stuff. You have defense. You have whatever. You have moving plans to think about. And you have all these things. So try to plan ahead if you can. Start the process as early as you can. It's never too early to start the process. It can be too late, depending on what's your plan after defense. Does your PhD lab, can it accommodate you for a few more months in the interim as you figure out your stuff? Or do you have to go as soon as you defend? Like, you need to know these things, especially if, like me, like many people, like, you can't have a lapse in employment, in income. Like, you know, you need... You don't want to have, like, a month or two of just not making money. So especially if it involves moving. So anyway, try to plan ahead, talk to your friends, talk to your mentors, you know, when you're making your decisions. And honestly, go with your, like, if your gut says, oh, I'm a little suspicious about this or that, you know, but the papers are great, or it's a big lab, famous lab, like, don't join a lab just because it's famous. But famous labs can also be good environments. It just, you have to do your diligence. So Yeah. I would just have to say, like, really, really communication. And communication takes, like, some kind of confidence. But if you can't find the confidence in time, that's okay too. Just fake it, you know, and just advocate for yourself. Because you're committing to something, you know, even if you leave the postdoc after a year because it's not the right fit, which is fine. There's still costs of moving and all this other stuff, you know, like unless you take another postdoc in the same city or another job. So just try to like really look out for your future self by being communicative.
Awesome. Thank you again, Ubada and Kayla, so much for joining us today. This has been Grad Chat by PhD Balance. This is our last episode for the year and likely our last live episode for a little bit. Episodes are posted on our podcast, hosted on anchor.fm and available on all major streaming platforms on Tuesdays. And as we said at the start, this is our last episode of the year, so see you in 2022. Until next time, goodbye and take care of yourself.